It's not very often one has the opportunity of speaking on the subject of the Christian and television, but that is my happy lot today. However, I'm not going to start by speaking directly about TV. Let me start in a wider context about the way people perceive the Bible in general. Now, I work a lot among non-Christian people, and I work quite a lot among Christian people. And I find, now Christians won't admit this, of course, but it's there nevertheless, but particularly among the non-Christian people, I find a general impression, it's never put into these words, but there is the general impression that the people and events mentioned in the Bible are not real. Most people see the Bible as a collection of stories with a moral, but they have very much difficulty in distinguishing in their own minds between a literary figure and a historical figure. And let me explain what I mean by a literary figure. That is, a figure who appears in literature. For example, Lady Macbeth. But Lady Macbeth is not an actual person. You read about her in a book. And then you read about Queen Jezebel. Now, she's read about in a book also, but she is an actual person. But for many, reading about Queen Jezebel and reading about Lady Macbeth are more or less one and the same thing. They see them in the same light. Or let's take the story of David killing Goliath. Well, they read that in the Bible, and then they read in another book about Jack the Giant Killer. And they can't really distinguish one from the other. Romeo and Juliet, great love story. But that's not a true story. You read also about, let us say, Samson and Delilah. Now, that's also in a book, but the difference is that in one case, the people are simply literary figures. In the other case, they are actual historical figures. But people seem to lump them all together, and I think there's a vague impression around that the Bible is not really real. Now, Christians won't admit this, but you only have to speak to them for a while to find that lurking in the back of their minds is a very unrealistic approach to the Bible. I find this when I'm speaking or teaching Christians or non-Christians, and I happen in the course of the talk to relate what I'm speaking about to something they can identify with, some actual event. Let's say the fire of Rome. You're talking about the execution of Paul, and then you mention Nero. Now, Nero is not mentioned in the Bible, but everybody knows about Nero and the fire of Rome. And immediately people seem to come down to earth. Or you talk about Alexander the Great and how he connects with certain other aspects of the development of the biblical story. Some person that they know about, and then you tie it in, and all of a sudden they seem to realize that it actually happened. Remember once when I mentioned, I was speaking at the end of the book of Romans, when there's some discussion about the sort of food that people will eat and how you can get on with each other even though you have different dietary habits. And I mentioned how these Italians had rather flamboyant attitudes when it came to eating. And somebody came to me afterwards and said, I'd never thought of that before, that they were actually Italians. Now, we say Paul is writing to the Romans. You see the Romans. See something Ben-Hur and all of that way back there. We think of the chariot races and ancient Rome. And then you say, well, they're Italians, which is what they were. And all of a sudden people say, goodness me, I never thought of it. And they think of Italians that they know of in their own community. You read in those same chapters of Romans, for example, that Paul says the people of Achaia and Macedonia have made this sort of offering. And you say, oh, yes, 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 and they're ancient regions and nothing really gels. And then the next verse, he says, and after that, I'm going to Spain. And all of a sudden you wake up. Spain. Oh, yes, we know Spain, where that is. You see what I mean? There's this vague feeling of unreality, that the whole thing is a story, but it's not really tied in with the nitty-gritty of things. And our picture books don't help either. You know the pictures of Jesus. He never really looks like an Asian. He's very European-looking. In fact, often when you find Jesus and the 12 apostles, the only one that looks a bit as if he came from the Middle East is Judas. He's always the scruffy one with the swarthy appearance and the black hair and the stubbly beard. But Jesus is always European-looking, blue eyes, brown, wavy hair, trimmed beard, and always wearing white. And when he moves, you get the impression that he doesn't actually walk on the ground, he sort of glides over the top of it on a thin cushion of air, that type of thing. Now, if you suggested to people that if Jesus lived today, he'd probably get around in shorts and t-shirt, and if he was going to work, well, he might put on jeans and shoes, but he'd probably ride the train to work and read the newspaper as he was going along. You present that to people, and some of them think it's irreverent, because it doesn't fit their picture. You see, they've got a very misty, hazy, idealistic, unrealistic picture of Jesus. You get what I'm talking about? the impression, it's the impression I'm getting onto here, the impression that is going around in people's minds often bears no relation to reality whatever. And the tragedy is that people accept the impression and miss the reality. Another thing that we notice is, speaking about the great victories of Israel, you know, in the Old Testament they went into war against this nation and they won great victories, and Joshua won this victory, and we preach beautiful sermons of spiritual victories, victory over the enemy and conquering evil and so on. It all sounds very impressive, and we sit there and we nod our heads and we get deep spiritual meaning out of these things. And we fail to see that what he's talking about is people sloshing around in blood and hacking each other to bits, real hand-to-hand combat, and it's a pretty gory business. Think again of the sacrificial system of the Old Testament. We talk about offering sacrifices and we get the deep meanings, and we fail to see the grisly side of it, with this priest puddling around, slitting animals' throats and cooking them on the altar and collecting the blood in a basin and taking the blood and splashing it around and things like that. You see what I mean? We've got the impression, and we've got the theology or whatever it happens to be. We've got a stereotyped image, and we've got religious jargon. Very often those images, that jargon, prevents us from seeing the real world properly. Now, when you come to television, what I've just been speaking about applies likewise. This whole world of impressions and unreality. And the great danger is that people believe what they see on television. Most of us are a bit skeptical about what we hear. It might be hearsay. We're also a bit skeptical sometimes about what we read. It may not be the truth. But we all believe what we see. We see something happen and we believe it. Our eyes don't tell lies. We believe what we see. Now, that may be okay in the real world, but of course the TV screen is not the real world. And that's the thing that people often fail to understand. Now, let's take, first of all, factual type reporting, things like the news and documentaries and current affairs and those sorts of presentations. Even those don't portray the real world. You may be watching the news and you get a 2-minute clip of something. Let's say it's a demonstration or something of that nature. But the actual demonstration lasted 3 hours, and it might have been a very, very boring affair. And so the camera is waiting for something that is going to be interesting to look at. It's got to be visual. But they'll put that across on the TV, and you get the impression that that's what the whole thing was about. But it could have only been a very, very small part of the total deal. I'm not saying that the people deliberately distort, but what I'm saying is they've got to get something that's visual, something that's look-at-able, if I can use that expression. Also, even if people are honest and have all the goodwill in the world, they still can't help but present something that is other than the full truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because it's got to be edited, you've got to reduce it down to a certain size. There's always an editor that clips things out and puts things in. There's always a photographer that decides what he's going to photograph and what he's not going to photograph. What you see is a real photograph, but you don't see all the things he didn't photograph. Or you see what the editor has reorganized. Or you see the script that some person has written into it, the news commentator's script. Human beings intervene and they impose their interpretation upon what we're seeing. And I'm not attributing evil motives to these people. I'm just saying they are human beings. They've all got prejudices. They've all got opinions. And it's inevitable that what we sit down and blandly accept as fact is not necessarily fact at all. This supposed factual objectivity of the TV news is an illusion. Likewise, their technical expertise, that again can be put to wrong use. It can produce a very efficient presentation, it can get very good pictures, but it can again be very distorting. Take, for example, the interview where some prominent public figure is being interviewed. Now, I don't blame politicians and other prominent public figures who insist that they will only give interviews if those interviews are transmitted live. Because if they give an interview which is recorded and then it's taken back into the studios and then it's shown in the evening program 4 or 5 hours later, well, as we all know, it's been edited. It's been reduced from 25 minutes to 14 and a half minutes or whatever. And in the editing process, important things are left out. Now, the editor may not deliberately plan to distort things, but it's inevitable that he's going to distort things. Quite often, questions are reframed. In fact, if you're watching very carefully, you can often work it out for yourself, where the questioner, the interviewer, has asked a person a question, but later on, when the thing is edited, he redoes the question in the studio, and you can pick the difference of intonation or resonance or whatever in the sound sometimes, and you know that he's dubbed the question in. because he might have messed up the earlier question, or he's decided now to shorten it. But in the shortening of it, or the changing of it, he may have given a different emphasis. And the actual answer that you see is not the answer to the question at all. It's an answer the man gave to another question. But the question that is edited in may have a different twist to it. And in the interest of getting an efficient presentation, they clip out a lot of things which may be quite important. A man might say something, yes, he says it, but then he adds a qualifying sentence afterwards. But in the presentation, the qualifying sentence is dropped out. Maybe the interviewer didn't think it was important, but maybe the person who spoke those words did think it's important. The things are shifted around into different slots. They're seen in different contexts. Certainly the man said that, but he said that in the context of something else. But in the re-edited version that you see, it's put in a different context, and so it can come up looking something other than what the speaker originally intended. I'm not trying to impute evil motives to television producers. All I'm trying to say is that no news, no current affairs presentation, no face-to-face interview seen on TV should be blindly accepted as the real thing. Because the very same technological skills that can produce high-quality pictures can also produce very credible deceptions. Now, the great difficulty is that most of us, when we're watching TV, are in a fairly relaxed state of mind. We're fairly passive, and we tend not to challenge what we see, and that is one of the main issues I want to address today. I think we've got to change those viewing habits. We've got to get ourselves into a much more critical frame of mind. We're not just to sit there and let this whole TV presentation drip all over us. We're to be a lot more objective and a lot more hard-nosed assessing what we see on the television. When we read a novel, we know that what we are reading is fiction, so we're not tricked. But when we're watching TV, we tend to think that what we're seeing is reality. I'm thinking again here of the TV news and the so-called current affairs, face-to-face interviews, that sort of thing. We think that what we're seeing is reality. And in fact, what we're seeing may be a distortion, or worse still, a falsification of the real thing. Now, if those problems are evident in programs that purport to be factual reporting, well, of course, they're far more obvious in programs that are straight-out entertainment, such as plays, movies, soap operas, the old weekly cops and robbers things that people seem to watch endlessly. I can't understand how they can stomach so many of those things end on end, night after night. Well, at least I suppose they are aware that they're watching a made-up presentation. But even there, there's a great danger. Now, I'm not saying the danger is that somebody who sees something on the television that's violent or sexy is going to go out and then commit some violent or sexual misdeed. Now, of course, that may be the case. But in most cases, that is not what happens. But what happens in almost every case, and it will happen to you and me if we don't take steps to stop it, is that our minds are numbed. We sit there, thick-headed, just relaxing, just letting the whole thing pour itself upon us. Our minds are numbed, and if we don't watch out, our values are altered. And so it's a far more subtle thing. It's a much slower process, but it goes much deeper. We are absorbing the cultural values without really realizing it. And we can readily mistake what we see for reality. I've heard people say, well, that's the way it is in the real world, and they watch these things week after week, and before long they actually believe it, and they really think that that's what the world is like. It's no wonder then that very soon their own behavior reflects it, because they say, well, that's the way people are, that's what happens in the world. Inevitably, it filters through, our values change, and slowly but surely, often without our even being aware of it, we absorb all this stuff, and sooner or later our behaviour reflects it. The big problem is that when this is normally pointed out to Christians, well, of course they come back looking very pious and perhaps a little guilt-stricken, and they say, oh yes, TV's very bad, and there's so much sex and violence on it. And so they make these disapproving sounds concerning sex and violence. They see themselves as defenders of traditional standards. They vote for the Festival of Light, and they go to these sorts of rallies that are anti-abortion, anti-homosexuality, and defending the country's morals and so on. You see, they're always on their guard against that sort of thing. But I believe the great danger lies elsewhere. Now, I agree there's an awful lot of garbage in that sex and violence line on the TV. And there's no doubt that it does a lot of damage to people. But I feel that among Christians in general, there is a far greater danger coming from this other area, the area of news and face-to-face interviews, or even talkback shows, or even commercials. I believe that these things are far more damaging than the more obvious films, movies, and the like, which are full of sex and violence. The reason being that when a person watches, or is going to watch, or is considering whether he will watch, and most times incidentally he does, but when he's considering whether he will watch this thing that looks a bit sexy or violent or whatever, he tends to steel himself. He tends to get his defences up. In fact, he may even recognise an R-rated movie for what it is. He might see it as an attack on his moral values, and so he censors it out. And yet at the same time, he will watch this third-rate trash, all these soapies and these half-hour, night-after-night episodes that roll on the story endlessly, these cops and robbers nonsense things, these greed-promoting commercials, terrible stuff. And he'll just drink it all in. And it eats away at the mind like a cancer. The great tragedy is that people are not aware of it, because they're not defensive against that sort of thing. They're more defensive against what is obviously violent or hideous, or a portrayal of matters of sex that are clearly against his morals. He's clearly defensive against these things. But the rest of the garbage that comes across, he's normally not defensive. And what they do to a person's value systems is amazing. I think the commercials, the advertisements, probably do as much damage as just about anything. I suppose the problem arises because of the perfectly reasonable desire that most of us have to relax after a hard day's work. We sit in front of the TV to be entertained. We don't want to be made to think. We've done enough of that for the day. But the trouble is, if we become just spectators of what we see, we think we're spectators of life, and we forget, of course, that we're participants in life. We just can't sit idly by and look. We are actually living here. We're involved in the whole thing. And if we're not too careful, the impression we get from the TV screen can very easily dominate a whole view of the real world. And so we think that what we see is reality, and we believe it, and if we don't think about it and examine it, very soon we'll fall prey to the cleverest manipulator, the cleverest media manipulator. And the less a person has developed his critical faculties, the more at risk he is. That's why most Christians are at risk, because most Christians have not developed their critical faculties. And that's why children are particularly vulnerable, because children haven't developed their critical faculties. And most adults, I'm afraid, haven't either. I mentioned Christians, but you think Christians would be better than the rest, but it seems to me they're no different at all. And all these problems that I've just mentioned seem to be as prevalent among Christians as among the rest. Just a little note here about children. We know that Christian parents complain about the harm that TV does to the children, but the problem is mainly with the adults. If the parents are gullible, if they're lacking in discernment, if they're impulsive rather than rational in their decision-making processes, well, they can hardly expect their children to be otherwise, can they? Parental control doesn't simply mean controlling the knob. Now, that's what people think it might mean. I don't think it means that at all, that the parents control the knob. Certainly they do, but that's just one part of a much bigger scene. And the bigger scene is that parents must teach their children the full range of Christian values, so that the children grow up with the ability themselves to make right decisions and to see the difference between what is good and what's bad. To recognise trash as trash. To recognise garbage as garbage and have no interest in it. If you go back to the Old Testament, they didn't have TV, of course, but the Israelites there were told to teach their children the law, to teach them the values, teach them how to make judgments, how to discern and understand God's will and to walk in His ways. You know the verses in Deuteronomy 6. Teach these to your children so that they'll walk in my ways. In the New Testament, we're told something similar. I think particularly of Hebrews 5 at the end of the chapter, where it says that the mature people are those who have learned by practice to refuse the bad and choose the good. But they'll only learn that as they are soaked in the Scriptures. And that's why that section talks about being instructed in the Bible, understanding what it's talking about, and learning themselves to exercise discernment. And it's only as people themselves exercise discernment, as they make decisions and as they deliberately refuse the bad and choose the good. In other words, as their faculties are developed and they can see and assess and estimate the relative values of things, that is what brings maturity and growth. And unfortunately, it's a whole stage of development which is totally neglected in Christian families and the upbringing of Christian children. And you find many Christians get to adult life and go right through adult life and they still haven't really developed any great ability at discerning, at exercising judgment between one thing and another. We've got to feed our minds on what is good and wholesome so that we develop a capacity for this type of judgment. Now, children, I'm sure, will get this type of personal development in a home environment where the parents talk to their children intelligently, where they encourage them to assess and to evaluate. But children will not get that sort of personal development in a home where parents use TV as a childminder. That would have to be the worst possible use of television as a childminder. So all this development of discernment thing that I'm talking about means that Christians must resist this media bent, this all-consuming passion at times that people have for presenting a certain type of image, the image of people, the image of events. Christians have got to concentrate instead on understanding the issues. Now, for many, that requires far too much effort. They're content just to sit back and to let the whole media presentation just roll on unchallenged. And usually the media presentation will major on what can be seen rather than what we have to think about. And just think of the news. A fire or an accident. A comparatively minor event in the whole drama of what's happened around the world today. A local fire. But it's visual. Spectacular. Flames leaping up and people screaming around carrying furniture out. Or an accident. A crumpled up car and flashing ambulance light, flashing police light. You know, that sort of chaotic look. It's visual. People can see it. It's a fairly minor event, comparatively speaking. But you see, it makes for interest. The image is there. That's a much more interesting thing to put on television than, let us say, an inquiry into government accountability. And yet an inquiry into government accountability, the whole issue of government accountability, would have to be surely one of the major considerations of life, because it affects everything that happens. But it's not the sort of thing that makes good television viewing. The trouble is that when the media does at last get round to dealing with something that is important, too often it panders to an unthinking public by avoiding the real issues. Oh, it says they're too complex. People are not going to understand that. I mean, you can't really examine the issues and deal with them with any sort of perception, because, I mean, it's too complex and people aren't in the mood for it. They don't want to think. I mean, television is not concerned with helping people to understand. Let's be honest. Television is not concerned with helping people understand. Television is concerned with entertaining people and making sure they stay tuned to that channel and keeping the ratings up and that sort of thing. That's what it's concerned about. It's not there to make people think. It's there to make people relax. And anything that's going to be a bit complex, they say, oh, well, that's not really good TV. And so they normally present things in a simple for or against format. Very black and white approach. And that really, to me, is one of the great tragedies. I'd just like to speak a little bit on that point here, not just in relation to television, but spreading out across the whole spectrum of life. And it's not only among ordinary people, it's among all strata of people, let's put it that way. It doesn't matter which sector of society you come from, and unfortunately it doesn't seem to matter whether you're a Christian or whether you're not. Christians have developed what they call Christian ethics and Christian moral standards, but when it comes to Christian thinking, there doesn't seem to be any difference. And that's one of the great tragedies, because the New Testament is full of instruction about Christians having renewed minds, Christians having discernment, Christians being filled with understanding, Christians being filled with knowledge. But as you look at the average Christian, it seems to me that, by and large, the Christian's thinking is not much different from the thinking of the non-Christian. This tendency to see things in black and white, to set things against each other, it's really tragic. I don't know why it is that there's this lack of confidence that people have. I should imagine that probably they don't know the subject. Perhaps they're just lazy, they don't want to think about the subject. And after all, it's much easier to retreat into an entrenched position where you're safe inside your little protective world of dogma. That's much easier than actually thinking about the issues. But of course, what happens is the whole thing blunts a person's critical faculties, it blinds a person to the truth, and it results in immature, ill-informed people. And I'm afraid that many Christians are indeed afraid of openness. They're afraid of openly thinking about issues, openly examining issues. Oh yes, they know how to behave in the right way. They've got the etiquette worked out. They have the right conduct. They do the right things. They say the right things. They're models of decorum. But they're careful very often to give nothing away. Have you ever noticed that among a lot of conservative middle-class Christians? Very careful to keep the whole thing looking very respectable, but they don't give much away. There are some people who never air an opinion. I know a lot of people like this. You're discussing something and they'll sit there or stand there making non-committal comments, and they'll wait until somebody else volunteers an opinion, and then they might join in. But you'll never get them to volunteer an opinion first. Lack of confidence, lack of understanding, lack of knowledge. Never air their doubts, never bare their souls, because, you know, people might think they're unspiritual. Worse still, not only think them unspiritual, but think them unorthodox. I heard this said of a speaker once. They're going to get a certain person to speak, who was one of the best Bible teachers I knew. Someone said, we don't want to get him. He says things that are different. What a crime to be a little bit unorthodox, not to follow the pat stuff, but actually to think about something and come up with some ideas that are going to make people examine the issues. Now, I know that Christians are not alone in this attitude, because there are many people who are very insecure outside this familiar routine, this jargon of their own set. But because they've never learnt how to discuss issues intelligently and honestly, they feel self-conscious and threatened, really, when they get into some sort of open discussion. Now, the big danger that happens here is that because they are ill-equipped to talk about issues, they get onto something else. And normally, although we're ill-equipped at times to talk about issues, we are well-equipped to talk about personalities. You notice this yourself in a discussion with Christian people over any issue whatever. Notice it on the television likewise, that when you're trying to get to the essence of the issue, you're talking about it backwards and forwards, and then a person gets cornered, and then it changes. They start to make accusations. It changes from the issue being discussed to the personalities involved. And after all, we've all got weaknesses. Everyone's got a weakness somewhere. So all of us are vulnerable, which makes it very difficult to discuss a thing rationally, because a person's always going to find something he can attack you on, some personal misbehavior, misdemeanor, or attitude that he can latch onto. So discussion turns off and accusation comes in instead. Constructive dialogue goes out the window and we get a bit of verbal fisticuffs going on. Now, you'd think that we'd all be a bit ashamed of this, but this is the incredible part. We're not. Coming back to the TV, because it's a reflection of that very attitude that I've just been talking about. This is what I'm saying. It reinforces that attitude. Now, that is the attitude I've just described. That's what I'd like to see got rid of. That's what I'd like to see banished from Christian discussion. That's what I'd like to see Christians getting rid of and leading the way towards a more informed approach to life. But all the time, television is entrenching us in that terrible attitude that I've just been describing. And so it confirms people in this prejudice, in this bias, in this entrenched attitude where you don't want to think about issues. You just follow black and white, for or against, and when you get cornered, just turn off onto personalities. Have you ever noticed television interviewers? Very rarely do they try to clarify a complex issue. Instead, you get a very infantile presentation, as a rule, where the whole thing is boiled down to a simple yes or no proposition. Quite often, instead of trying to actually learn something from the person that they're interviewing, they try to nail him. Instead of trying to encourage intelligent dialogue, the interviewer so often is trying to show the person up as a humbug or a hypocrite. Now, you must have seen that, surely. If we've got a nightly diet of this sort of thing, I mean, is it any wonder that Christians often see it as heroic to be abusive and weak to be reasonable? I mean, what hope is there for any sort of discussion of different political viewpoints? What chance do we have of getting some intelligent consideration of some of the burning issues of the day? What chance is there for the cases, let us say, for the employer and the employee? What chance does that have of getting a fair hearing via the media? You see, people want to scrap. They want to fight. Sport's their main interest. And they see everything in terms of winning or losing. Now, how often has it happened? And I heard it just said recently, I was in somebody's house, and I happened to know the interview that they were referring to because I've seen it myself. There was a discussion of two alternative viewpoints, and this other person said, oh, he was weak. He should have really clobbered that other fellow. He should have really chopped into him. So that's what they want. They want someone to really blast the other person off. They don't want to see that there is an issue here that's important that needs discussing. No, they start from an entrenched position, and what they want is a winner. They want a knockout. It's like a boxing ring. They want a knockout. I've heard it said, oh, did you see how so-and-so got stuck into somebody else on the TV last night? Boy, he clobbered him, didn't he? That's the mentality. People are after a win or lose type of contest. And it's so tragic that the real issues of our country, issues right across the board, I'm not just speaking of politics, I'm speaking of everything, the whole show, There's just no really rational discussion of these things. What I'm saying is this: instead of trying above all for victory, why not try first of all for truth? Instead of wanting to rush in and assault others, why not make the attempt to understand the issues that are involved? The Bible warns us against being like a mule or a horse. You know, in Psalm 32, the mule or the horse is very safe and secure behind its blinkers and its bit and its bridle, but it's a dumb animal nevertheless. We might feel safe and secure with our bit and bridles and blinkers on, but I'm afraid we're not much better than dumb animals if that's the extent of our concern and our interest in these things. God wants his people to have understanding so that they are equipped to handle these debates and controversies of life. But unfortunately, we live in a society where very often the least informed are the most outspoken, and as a result, the person who thinks carefully and rationally is not likely to get a hearing at times. However, he is more likely to get closer to the truth. And I believe that God is concerned about truth. TV, unfortunately, cons us into accepting a false impression. Because even if it is an interview, as I've just been mentioning, the whole complex issue is normally out of the road in about 7.5 minutes. The problem solved. After 7.5 minutes, we got to the solution. One has clobbered the other. We got a winner. That's all we wanted. Complex issues get no airing. We've got this problem-solving thing. The whole issue is solved inside a very short time. In fact, if you look at the commercials, you find that many of the problems of life are solved inside 30 seconds or 1 minute because of the slick presentation. You see, we are conned into believing that there is a simple solution to life's problems. And in reality, there is not. Very rarely is there a simple solution to life's problems. Most people are driven on through bias and through prejudice, and particularly through political bias and political prejudice. In fact, I'm inclined to think that most Christians make their decisions not on the basis of what the Word of God teaches, but on the basis of what their favourite political party follows. Their allegiance to their political party, in 9 cases out of 10, is stronger than their allegiance to the Bible. It's stronger than their allegiance to Christ and to the truth at times. They just blindly follow. You just notice when issues are brought up. If it's an issue of the other party, the one they don't like, or someone in that party does something wrong, they come down like a ton of bricks. Not long after, a person in their own party does virtually the same thing. Well, they might defend the person and go out of their way to show how it wasn't all that wrong. And if, of course, they get to the stage where clearly they have to admit it was wrong, they then say, oh, but they all do it. I mean, goodness me, all politicians, I mean, the other crowd are just the same. You know what I mean? They're totally biased and they don't seem to have any perspective of viewing issues. They more or less wait and see what their particular party is going to do about it, and then they pursue that. And that loyalty, I think, is one of the worst of all loyalties, loyalty to a political party, and it blinds Christians to their understanding of God and his truth. Now, this blurred vision, if Christians are unable to distinguish one thing from the other, I mean, what chance is there? And when it comes to watching the television, this distinction between reality and unreality, they can't tell the difference between fact and impression. They can't tell the substance from the image. Well, if they can't discern, I mean, what chance do they have of dealing satisfactorily with all the complex issues of life? More than that, I believe they'll be very ill-equipped to convince other people of the reality of sin and judgment. It makes it very difficult to convince people the reality of this when we live in a world where there's such fuzziness between what is real and what is simply impression. Christianity doesn't belong to the world of fables and impressions and make-believe. Christianity is grounded in history and it's based on fact. Just let me give you a few illustrations here. Peter, in his first letter, he says, in declaring the glory of Christ, we were not following made-up stories. We were not following a myth. He says, we heard his voice. We were with him on the mountain. We were there. We saw him. The real thing. It's grounded in history, grounded in fact. Luke, when he starts his gospel, says, look, what we're telling you is not just an impression. It's not just a story. It's not just another Lady Macbeth, Jack the Giant Killer, Romeo and Juliet. This was actually seen by eyewitnesses. And in the first 4 verses of Luke's gospel, he says that the whole of his document is based on the authoritative testimony and authoritative records assembled by eyewitnesses. In the opening words of John's first letter, he says, the one I'm preaching about is one we heard, one we saw and touched. An actual human being, a real human being. It's not just a literary figure we're talking about. It's not just an impression on the screen. It's a real, live human being. And Paul, in Colossians, says, I don't want anybody to mistake the shadow for the substance. And the substance, he says, is Christ. Do you know the part there in Colossians chapter 2, verse 17? We're not concerned with the shadows, we're concerned with the substance, and the substance is Christ. That's where it is. It's in the historic Christ that the true meaning of man's existence is found. It's in a person who lived in this world, who died, and who rose again. But what chance do people have of coming to grips with the issues of life when they can't tell reality from unreality? Television has blurred their perception. I mean, they don't know who's real and who's not. Most people couldn't tell you, I think. They wouldn't know the difference between, let us say, Barry Humphries and Dame Edna Everidge. They're not quite sure which is which. They don't know the real from the impression. Which is the real person? You can go right through the TV shows, and I think people have a great difficulty in telling the difference. Does Rumpole really exist? Just thinking of an illustration Malcolm Muggeridge gave a number of years ago. He was involved in a survey where people were given a list of 20 names from popular TV shows, and it was a mixture of people who were real and people who were fictitious. And when the answers came in, with many of the names, fewer than two-thirds of the people surveyed gave the correct answer. They didn't know, with that sort of befuddlement around. It's no wonder people fail to take Christ seriously. I think there are many, they're not quite sure if he's any more real than Santa Claus. In fact, I'm inclined to think at times that some Christians aren't quite sure. The whole thing seems to be blurred and mixed up. We use the well-worn phrases, and that gives a good appearance of Orthodox Christianity, but let us not mistake those for the real thing. Christianity is concerned with reality. It's not concerned with cant and humbug. It gives no slick solutions to life's problems, but it does enable people to handle those problems through bringing them into a right relationship with the living Christ. He has lived in this world, and now he's able to give help to his people. Having suffered, he's able to help those. He knows, we are told in Hebrews, we have a high priest who knows our temptations, who feels our infirmities. He's been through it. He learned obedience through the things he suffered. But this help is not going to be forthcoming unless we're prepared to make sacrifices. Romans 12:1, present our bodies living sacrifices, and then the next verse, be renewed in your minds. And if we're going to make that sacrifice of ourselves, it's going to mean the renewal of our mind. Many people have not made any sacrifice in their minds at all. They might have made sacrifices of money or pleasure or convenience, but not when it comes to the renewing of their mind. They're still entrenched, and the sacrifice is going to involve the dismantling of some well-established prejudices and the changing of these entrenched attitudes. Now, the result's not going to be that life from then on will be plain sailing. There might be a few storms, because conventional and orthodox and conservative people will not appreciate this appearance of some nonconformists among them. But at least it's going to be a journey towards truth and reality. And God is concerned for truth and reality.